Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Retro Raw, or the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we delve back 20 years ago to find out what the WWE were up to that week. I'm joined by Sondra. Hi Sondra, how are you?
Hi Kenny, I am doing all right. Retro Raw continues to exist. I must say that Stone Cold Steve Austin is a particular delight on this episode, and I enjoyed his shenanigans much more than I enjoyed a lot of the rest of the show. But yeah, things are all right. How are you?
I'm good. I enjoyed this show. I thought it was fun. They're building towards King of the Ring. We're kind of now that the greater power thing has kind of been revealed, I need to now learn to live with it going forward. So I'm trying.
It's kind of tough to live with. Like, it still makes me actively angry.
I mean, it was only a week ago, so we're still allowed to be angry, I think.
We're still, it's fresh trauma.
It is fresh trauma. Well, you know, before we talk about Raw, we always talk about Heat the night before. The episode of Heat the night before is not exactly the most exciting one in the world, but it is quite fun. We have, you can hear Finn and I talk about it over on Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes. We talk about the six-man tag with the Hardy Boys and Michael Hayes against Edge, Christian and Gangrel, which kind of just deviates into a conversation about Michael Hayes and how he is the age that he is. At this point, Michael Hayes was 39 years old.
I mean, Michael Hayes at this point on Retro Raw is younger than my husband is now. Look at my husband and look at Michael Hayes on this episode of Retro Raw and Heat and all of that.
It's baffling. It is baffling in so many ways. But we do, of course, at the end, get the debut of what would go on to be Too Cool, Grandmaster Sexy and Scotty Too Hottie, because they are now no longer the power bottoms for DOA with the pink helmets. They've moved on, and Harvey Whippleman is a referee now. He's horrendous on this episode, like really bad.
So you say it's the debut. Have they just been Scott Taylor and Brian Christopher before? Is that why it's the debut? Because now they're Grandmaster Sexy and Scotty Too Hottie?
Yes, because obviously they've been just kind of too much. That's the team. They've been dressed like weirdos, and this they come out dressed like gangster rap people, which is what okay. They go on to do. So they interfere in this match, the six-man tag, then later on they do a promo where they call themselves Grandmaster Sexy and Scotty Too Hottie. So that was fun. There's a terrible promo where China and Triple H and Billy Gunn are there, and China's like, tonight I'm gonna kick people and not in the ass, and looks at Billy Gunn, but it's delivered so horribly.
So is Billy Gunn in the corporate ministry now?
No, he is not.
He's not, right? Okay.
He's like in the outer periphery, I guess.
He's sort of like loosely associated with them. Because that was one of my questions I had during Retro Raw. Mr. Sondra was very confused and asking me to explain why Billy Gunn seemed to be part of them. And I was like, I don't know.
Well, he is now only called Mr. Ass.
That's true.
He's supposed to no longer be Badass Billy Gunn or BA Billy Gunn or Billy Gunn. He's Mr. Ass.
He is just Mr. Ass. He's just a butt. That's all he is.
That's all he is. But we also got the Acolytes against Mark Henry and D'Lo on Heat, which ended up that Mark Henry and D'Lo were doing pretty well. So the Ministry came out to get disqualification so that the Acolytes couldn't lose their titles to them. There is a promo that is just so funny because it's so bad, where Jerry Lawler is like desperate to get the scoop on how Test's date with Stephanie went. And Test is like this very weird like gentleman in the Attitude Era somehow. And he was like, what was it? Finn described it on Heat as like, you know, the one shining beacon in a pit of absurd. There's a way he described it, which is really tremendous. So do go listen to everybody. But he basically...
I'm excited to listen to that Heat review. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, everyone.
Yes, check that one out. It's very, very fun. So Test has been a gentleman, said to Jerry Lawler, I'm not, you know, we're just going to be friends. We had a nice date. We're just going to be friends. And as this is happening, Jeff Jarrett walks by with Deborah and just goes, stop looking at Deborah, and walks on. And Test is not looking at Deborah at all.
But was Jerry Lawler looking at Deborah?
No.
How was Deborah walking by and Jerry Lawler wasn't looking at her?
Because he was too busy looking at Test going, give me the details, what are Tess like? Essentially.
I might have to check out this interview because it sounds like a delight.
There was also, then Jeff Jarrett came out for an interview with JR. He wants to stress that Deborah is his property and prime real estate. But this brings out Test, who essentially is now a suffragette because he is defending women's rights all over the shop at all times. Like, he's defending Stephanie, he's defending Deborah, he's just a good guy. He is now dead, so, you know, that's a thing.
There is that. That
There
is
is
an
that.
issue.
We also got these. So Austin apparently had, because he's now the CEO, had just decided to book two random tag matches. So we had Hardcore Holly in the Big Show against X-Pac and Kane. Hardcore Holly decides it's a good idea to boss the Big Show around and tell him, "I've got this. You just do what you're told."
Well, I can't
And
imagine that going poorly at all.
no, it does not end up in him getting chokeslammed and pinned by X-Pac in 2 minutes. Val Venus faces Draws, and then at the end, Draws and Albert pierce Val's nose.
Right.
We then got an Intercontinental title match where Test defeats
So they're
Jeff.
just, oh, is this okay? Because I've heard of this, that they just like pierce and tattoo people and that's their
Yes.
thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Then we got Test versus Jeff Jarrett, where Test is facing Jeff, and all of a sudden, as Jeff's hit his finisher, Shamrock runs in, lays out Jarrett while the ref's down, puts Test on top, and Test wins the Intercontinental Championship on Heat. However, right after the match, Harvey Whippleman, who is the referee, has another referee run out to say, "By the way, Ken Shamrock interfered, blah, blah, blah," and Harvey Whippleman reverses the decision. And the thing that's really funny about it is, as you'll hear us talk about on Patreon, the angle's actually really good. Really fun. You end up popping for Tess win the title. The crowd are going crazy, and there's a really fun exchange you can then do of the other referee coming out going, "Look, this is what happened. It's not valid, blah blah blah." And Harvey Whippleman's job is to kind of like show how he's torn and what he should do. He doesn't know how to do that, so he just gives the belt back to Jeff Jarrett.
He flails about quite a
He
bit, from
skips
what I
all
remember.
of the facial expressions of the drama to just like complete the task.
Yeah, because they do show the clip of it on Raw, to kind of explain the situation and explain what's happened, and he does not look like he is the most effective man for this job. They did kind of play it off more as Deborah used her feminine wiles to get Harvey Whippleman to change his mind, like. Because another referee came down, but it wasn't Deborah the one trying to convince him.
Deborah was trying to convince him as well, but you'd hope that the referee is the thing that made him change his mind. But
Yeah, I
because
think on
Harvey
Raw they
Whippleman,
made it seem like it was her boobs.
well, the thing is, Harvey Whippleman's so bad that you can't really work it out. You
It's
can't
true.
work it out. I should mention, and listen, the main event of Heat was it was supposed to be a tag match of Road Dogg and Ken Shamrock against Billy Gunn and China, and then Billy Gunn ends up getting pinned in 1 minute and 30 seconds. So this push for Billy Gunn is not great because he keeps losing to everybody.
Like,
But
what even the fuck?
it makes no sense. Like I remember I was kinda like, I'm looking forward to seeing Billy Gunn's push to see why he didn't make it. Well, he loses all the time before anything happens to him. Why would he have made it?
Like, honestly, like I know he wins a thing, but at the same time, he seems like nothing, and he seems like they're just kind of making a joke out of him constantly on Raw, and it seems on Heat. And I mean, on Raw, they have a whole thing about him like getting his ass shaved and then there being a pimple on his ass and stuff. It's like, really? Like, that was a push for a guy? Really?
It's baffling, and it's well. So, but at the end of it, as always, is the case on Heat. The show ends in really an exciting way because you've got like Triple H, Billy Gunn, and China all, or Triple H, Mr. Ass, and China, all beating down Road Dogg, and then X-Pac and Kane come out to make the save, and then China, in a very rare showing, gets choke slammed by Kane, and the crowd are going nuts, and it goes off the air. So they do a really good
Because
job on
China
Heat.
getting comeuppance is a big deal. Like, it's
Never
kind of
happens.
exciting to see that.
Yeah, so again, they do a great job on these Heat episodes of giving you just tons of stuff in 45 minutes. You never get bored, and then you want to see more, which is the idea of what it was supposed to be at the
Yeah.
time. So do check that out over there on Patreon. Now, before we talk about Raw, I should just say at this point that on a press conference on the 15th of June 1999, there was a lawsuit filed by the Hart family against a number of defendants, including the WWF, Vince McMahon, Amspec Inc., Lumar Marine Lift All Company, who were responsible for the manufacturing of the harness and the cable equipment, Linda McMahon, as well as the individuals who set up the rigging, James Williams, Bobby Talbert, Matt Allman, and Jim Vincent, as well as the City of Kansas, the owners of Kemper Arena, claiming negligence in the stunt. And the basic claim of the suit is the WWF failed to provide safe and proper equipment for the 78-foot drop. And the quote from Martha Hart was, "My children have lost their father and I have lost the love of my life because of the greed of the WWF and its insistence that its wrestlers take greater, ever greater chances to attract entertainment dollars in this era of extreme sports. My hope is that this lawsuit will help prevent more loss of life and that other sports families will not have to endure the kind of pain we've experienced." It was a 118-page lawsuit, less than 46 counts against 13 defendants. The issue of not stopping the show was also an issue in the Associated Press story, with Martha saying that she was repulsed that the show continued after Owen Hart's fall. And the general manager of Kemper Arena, Alan Schmelzel, said that the decision to continue was not out of disrespect for Owen. He said, "Honestly, we didn't know at that point if he was dead." The thing was, people were making decisions backstage. You knew something was really badly wrong, so keeping it going, you can't really, say... You can't really defend it by saying, "Well, we didn't know he was dead." Well, you knew he was very, very badly hurt.
And the fact that he pretty clearly broke his neck right away and was, like, changing colours in the ring and stuff, something's pretty severe there.
Yeah, there was a police major called Gregory Mills in Kansas who was quoted in a paper as saying, and quoted in the Kansas City Star, as saying, "I'm looking at the rigging. I have a concern whether this was the safest way to do the stunt. We will be seeking expert advice to help draw some conclusions. We can't say if it was right or wrong or if due caution was taken. What we do know is that in attempting to do the stunt, Owen Hart died." That's kind of where things are right now. We should also mention, which is a baffling thing to think about, but on the exact opposite show against the one that we're about to talk about, the June 14th Raw that we're about to talk about, on the June 14th Nitro, we saw an appearance from Rina Mero in the front row. She was front row at Nitro. The crowd reacted.
Really?
Yep. She did this as a kind of a fuck you move. There was a massive Sable chant. There was a sign posted that might have been a plant saying Sable 1, Vince McMahon 0. There were close-ups of her on camera. She was waving for the camera. She was never identified as Sable or as Rina Mero. Bischoff was the only one who kind of commented on her, just saying he's seen Playboy and making some kind of cryptic comments.
What was Mark Mero up to at this point? Was Mark Mero in WCW?
No, he was still under contract to WWF. He's trying to get out at the same time as Sable. But WCW was trying to...
Can you imagine if that happened now? Like, if a WWE contracted employee went to Double or Nothing and showed up in the front row?
Yeah, I mean, I think now they have stuff in contracts to protect that, but at the time they didn't, because why would anybody do that? But WCW was trying to say that she bought a ticket to the show, but her WWF contract apparently said that it forbids her making an appearance of this type on a broadcast. The Meros were offered a contract released by WWF that would allow Mark to return to WCW immediately, but would not have allowed Rina or Sable to go to WCW until her WWF contract was supposed to expire, which was in August of 2001. This basically now, WWF and WCW both have lawsuits against each other. Mero has a lawsuit against WCW. Sable's got one against the WWF. There's lawsuits all over the place right now, which is quite hard to follow. But the WWF sent a cease and desist to Rina Mero after this, saying that they had suspended usage of the name Sable, so from this point forward, she could no longer use the name. So she's already shot the second Playboy cover, which is now not going to be able to be called Sable. She's got to call herself Rina Mero. She was at an autograph signing, autographing the name Sable on TV guides and stuff, but she's now not able to do that either. She's not apparently allowed to do that. But WWF were trying to get a fee from Playboy so that they would allow them to use the term Sable, but they would get money from it, because obviously she sold a million copies of the first one. But nobody knows what it's going to be like. In this week's TV guide of this week that we're talking about, Rina has an interview in it called, and it's the First Lady of the Ring. And she was asked about steroids and roid rage, and she said, "I can't say for certain, but it's common knowledge that you do not look like people in our sport without enhancement. The wrestlers, the crew that we count on to set up the ring and the ramp, a lot of them, I believe, may be on drugs. She talked about Vince dropping drug testing. She said that she came to the decision to want out long before the death of Owen Hart. She criticized WWF for keeping the show going. When it was brought up that she was topless on Playboy, but WWF was trying to get her to accidentally fall out of her top on Raw, she said, "There's a time and a place for that. I do not feel like in the middle of a wrestling arena where they're serving alcohol and there are screaming fans, including children in the front row. I don't feel like that is the proper place to be exposed. Posing for Playboy for me was a classy and tasteful thing to do." So WWF had been trying to get her to do a thing where like one of her tits would fall out, and she didn't want to do it. When asked about refusing it, she said, "Anytime you refuse to do anything, you're taken down a notch and someone else is put up. It is total competition 24 hours a day. Right after I told them I would not do that, it was scripted for me to lose my belt. If I would have agreed to that, I would still be the champion." WWF attorneys had sort of countered the point by saying that Sable losing the title was part of her planned storyline, and that she didn't it didn't have anything to do with her indicating that she didn't want to bare her breasts on TV.
They basically wanted her to do what they had Jacqueline do before, right?
Yes. And then also she was asked about guys punching holes in the women's dressing room to like look in.
Ew.
And she said, "Every time that happened, we complained about it. We had several discussions with Vince McMahon to find out who was punching holes in walls to view us. One wrestler apologized. He felt so bad, but I felt very uncomfortable and unsafe working there or even being backstage. It is such an obscene atmosphere. Women are having contests to see who has the largest nipples. They're pulling their skirts up to expose their private parts." The story also said that her current WWF contract was for a $150,000 guarantee, but she noted that she noted that that was less than the men in the company, and that's the two big news stories that happened that weren't on this show. Sable and Rina Mero turning up on Nitro, and the interview that she did on TV Guide, the lawsuit for Owen. So a lot of stuff going on that's not on TV.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of like behind the scenes backstage type drama that's not really going to manifest on TV, except for the fact that obviously Sable is off of TV and we're not seeing her anymore.
That yeah, that's true. I do want to bring this up. Just gonna I'll not do it all the time, but I'll bring it up just a couple of times, given like what the TV ratings are like now. So, this Raw, the 14th of June Raw, drew a 6.66 rating and a 10.7 share. The record was an 8.19, so it was kind of not that far off that. But Raw doubled the viewership of Nitro in every competitive quarter. But not in the overrun. The overrun, which had the Raw main event of Undertaker, Rock, and Triple H, drew a 6.78 final, and WCW's very brief sort of Nash and Randy Savage main event did a 3.79. So that's kind of the ratings. The Sunday Night Heat that I talked about earlier on, that did a 4.24 rating. And what's funny is like, so you know how Raw's kind of been doing like a 2 now
Yeah.
in 2018, 2019? Livewire, which is a recap show, did a 1.7 at this point.
Wow. So a recap show is doing almost as well as current in the year of our Lord 2019 Raw.
Pretty much.
That's impressive.
So let's get on to this June 14th Raw. We kick off the show with a big video package of last week, and we cut to Titan Towers. We see Steve Austin there. He's talking to workers outside who have wheelbarrows. He gets into Titan Towers. He asks the receptionist, you know, because she's like, World Wrestling Federation, how can I help? Or whatever it is that she says. And Austin's like, you know, what are you doing? Do you always answer the phone like that? How long have you been here? She's been there a year. And he said, I'll answer the next call and I'll tell you what to do. And he picks up the phone and says, who the hell is this? Okay, what the hell do you want? And says, can you handle that? And gets her to do, oh, hell yeah. And then there's this just great comedic moment where Austin's like, where's my office? Top floor. Okay, fine. And Austin goes to leave. And as he's walking towards the lift, you just hear in the background the phone go. And this girl going, who the hell is this?
It was
So funny.
brilliant. It was so good. I thought she was great in this segment, actually. Like, 'cause you know, a lot of the people in these segments are like, they're not really actors and you know, they just kind of work there and whatever. And you could tell she was kind of like laughing her way through it. But like, that's kind of how you would react to Stone Cold Steve Austin coming in as the new CEO anyway, right? So it worked for me. I loved this. I thought this was a great way to start the show. And just, of course, Steve Austin having to be in an office environment throughout this entire episode is like definitely the highlight of the show for me. Because there was a bunch of other stuff I didn't really love, but this was all great stuff. And I just really liked her. I liked the who the hell is this afterwards as he's getting in the elevator.
So good, such a fun start. Then we get Vince and Shane coming out of the corporate ministry. I love that Triple H essentially looks like he's in a gay bar when he comes out here. He has leather trousers with like a zip-up top with a cross and a backwards beret.
Mm-hmm.
So look.
I mean, it's definitely a choice that he's making.
I also love the idea that the Mean Street Posse, The Undertaker, The McMahons, Triple H in China, and Paul Bearer and Viscera are all friends.
Viscera and that headband. Like, who told Viscera that that headband was a good idea?
I bet you, like, backstage he was talking about that headband all day. He's like, look at my headband. All right, calm down.
I mean, he added it last week, and it's just like, maybe someone praised him for the headband last week, and he was like, yeah, this is my new look.
Somehow he thinks it's different. So basically, the whole idea is that they're out there talking about how, you know, they've got these plans, what they're going to do.
Do you think Angelo Dawkins looked up to Viscera?
Wow, what a thought. Perhaps. I mean, yeah, he does go on to become the world's largest love machine, so maybe he did.
I mean, I'm just saying, maybe that just instilled in a young Angelo a love for headbands, and that's why he wears two of them.
So the opening promo was essentially Vince and Shane talking about how they, you know, they're going to do it. They're basically going to have tonight play out like how Austin and the McMahons are going to play at King of the Ring. They set up a dog collar match with Road Dogg and Billy, Road Dogg and Mr. Ass. There's a David and Goliath match with it, because, of course, at King of the Ring, Austin will be David, they will be Goliath. It's X-Pac and Big Show. Acolytes versus Kane to do the two-on-one aspect. There'll be a blind date match to get back at Tess for taking out Stephanie, where Tess will be blindfolded against the Boss Man. There'll be a straitjacket match with Shamrock against Jarrett. It'll be a night to remember, and then Patterson and Briscoe come out. They basically start saying, you know, what are you doing? How could you do this to your family? Vince is like telling Patterson to back off, and he said, if that's a threat, you can go to hell. And Briscoe then says, oh, and on top of that, you can get someone else to get your coffee. With, like,
I love the coffee the most callback.
Pedestrian finish to the promo of all time.
Oh, and when you're in hell, you can get your own coffee or something like that.
But and Vince sells it like he's just said the worst thing ever.
Of course.
So, yeah, it's a bit of a long-winded promo to get to the point. It's essentially kind of similar to what we've had before, where whatever the story is, they're kind of setting up matches to go around it.
A bit of a long-winded promo. This was the longest of long-winded promos. Oh my goodness, it was so bad. I did not enjoy this promo at all. I thought it was so incredibly, like, just, they were trying way too hard. Because they're like, we're going to have a match tonight. Let's have a dog collar match. Yeah, a dog collar. We have a road dog, Jesse James, so we'll put him in a dog collar. And, Mr. Ass, too. And, you know, when the McMahons face Austin, it's going to be like David and Goliath. Of course, we will be the Goliath, and he will be the David. So let's have a David and Goliath match with the Big Show versus X-Pac. Big Show is big, and X-Pac is small. And it was basically like, I'm surprised they didn't go, you know, we also have a member of the roster called Al Snow, and so I think that we should have a blizzard match where you build a snowman, because Al Snow is on our roster, and I was walking along and saw a tree outside, so let's have a tree on a pole match tonight. Like, that's essentially how this promo went the entire time, and I was just like, wow.
I don't know, like, I've got to disagree with you big time. I did not see it this way whatsoever. I think you're wrong, because for me, when I was watching it, I was going, the crowd were into what was going on. What they were doing was working for what the storyline is at the time. And yeah, the stuff that you're mentioning, hyperbolic, yeah, you know, the dog collar match and all that kind of stuff. But I liked that what they did was everybody that they were, all the matches that they made up made sense. It made sense that if they're going to do, you know, X-Pac having to face somebody and be a bigger guy, it's the Big Show. And they're both kind of baby faces. So, you know, there's a conflict there. Kane against the Acolytes, he's got to try and go up against the both of them, but he doesn't have any help. Shamrock in a straitjacket, well, that's going to take away all his ability to do stuff. And I don't know, I felt like, I don't like the greater power thing, we've talked about that at all, but I thought they did a pretty decent job here cementing Vince back to being a heel and back to being on the dark side. Having Vince and Shane do the promo is better than having The Undertaker do it. So I don't
I
know.
mean, true. It's just, it was the delivery for me. That's what it was. I don't mind them making the matches necessarily, although it did seem like way too many stipulations and just like way too much of a thing for me. It was just a little too Vince and Shane broing all over the place. And the delivery of it was just kind of, I don't know, the way they went on and on and on about the whole thing. I mean, honestly, during this promo, I got so tired of their bullshit that I noticed that MIDI, I don't know if you noticed this. It's hard to tell, but like Midian at one point is like crawling on the ground in the corner. And I was like, why the fuck is he on the ground? And then you don't see him again for like the rest of the promo. So I kept going, where the fuck is Midian? Where has he gone? Is he just gone away? And like, you don't see him at all until the very end when he's like in a different corner and stands up. So he must be like crawling around the ring this entire promo. I don't know why. Like, I don't know what Midian's doing. And
I think
the whole thing was just baffling to me.
I think the reason this kind of works for me, so basically the idea, you know these kind of shows that we've had the last few weeks of the baby face or the heel making the matches for the show. This basically lasts from mid-May to the end of June, and then that's it. It's gone after that. It doesn't happen again. So it's basically up until King of the Ring, and then we're done with that thing. But what I liked about
I'm ready for that to be done.
it's different, is what I like about it. I guess because I know that it doesn't go on for a while, I guess in my head I can kind of just be like, okay, this is a few weeks with this, and whereas for you're like, oh, how much longer do we need to see this? It works
Well, and
for
I
me.
think it reminds me too much of now, long-winded authority opening type promos, because that's what happens now, and I've seen it so many
But then the
times
difference
in,
is,
current day.
I guess the difference is on these shows, I think they do a good job when they make these matches up of having enough of the heels getting some of their way and the baby faces getting some of their way. It's quite balanced about how it goes. And that's what I kind of like about it, because what tends to happen now is that, the idea, because I know Brian Alvarez always talks about it, where he's like, WWE now is built on let's get heat for as long as we can. And then you just give the baby face a little bit. Whereas I feel like when you watch these shows, the baby face always gets to get a little bit of comeuppance, or one of them. And I like the
They
element.
do, and that's the checks and balances that we've talked about on the show, and that's when it works for me, is when there are checks and balances. But in this opening promo, I don't know, it's interesting that we saw it so differently, and it's an interesting discussion to have. Because like for me, the opening promo kind of, I also couldn't believe in the integrity of the promo, because I was like, but Stone Cold Steve Austin is the CEO and he's supposed to be in charge. So how are you guys just running the show right now? And also, where is Shawn Michaels? Like, where is Shawn Michaels to be that balance?
Well, the one thing I think that I would say, and it doesn't bother me too much, and again, I guess it's that thing that we've talked about before, where if something works for you, then you kind of are able to look past it, which is that the one thing that doesn't really make sense is why was Shawn Michaels not there? Sorry, Steve, why was Steve Austin not there? Because Steve Austin should be there, because that's the whole idea, is that Steve Austin, Steve Austin should be there, but I guess because for me, because all those segments were so great, I was okay with it. I will say this just to make you feel better: Shawn Michaels does reappear next week, so
Okay,
he
good.
is back. But the reason, I mean, they would never say this on screen, but this was taped right after the I think was this taped right after the I can't remember if the show next week's a taped one or a live one. But yeah, Shawn's back next week, so that puts that checks and balances back. And Austin being away kind of gives McMahon's a chance, I guess, to kind of try and have their evil way in the building while Austin has his way at the office. But I think the only thing that I would say to try and step back and go be objective is that I would have liked a reason as to why, maybe something like where Austin was there, but the McMahons fucked him somehow so he couldn't get back in time or something. So then
Right,
that
because
would have been weird.
where was this Raw held?
This Raw took place. Let me find out, sorry.
No, it's fine, because I'm just thinking if, because Austin obviously was at Titan Towers in Stamford, Connecticut, right? So if this Raw was held somewhere far away from Stamford, Connecticut, it makes sense that he wasn't there because Austin was away checking out his offices that day. Now, I don't understand why he couldn't have checked out his offices on a non-Raw day.
I mean, this makes it make less sense. Raw was in Worcester, Massachusetts, which
All
is in the
right,
same
so
side
that
of the
does make it make
country.
less sense then. I don't know how far away that is, but it's not super far because they did establish that all of the Austin stuff was happening earlier in the day. Like, because he starts at 10 a.m. because when, the receptionists are there later on in the segment, getting the beer and stuff, he's like, I can't have a coffee at 10 a.m. I'll have a cold beer.
Maybe
So
he
there is
was
a
day
timeline
drinking.
established.
And then,
What?
like, he was day drinking, maybe, and then maybe that's why he didn't get back in time.
Yeah, but he's always day drinking. He's Stone Cold Steve Austin.
True, true. I'm just trying to try and make sense of it, but although we've made it
It's
make less
true.
sense.
But
Anyway.
it's just like because Shane and Vince, I guess, like together, they do hold 50% of the power. So I guess, like, if they pool their power, they kind of equal Stone Cold Steve Austin. But I still feel like Shawn Michaels is supposed to be the commissioner who makes the matches. So I don't really understand why Vince and Shane are doing it. And I guess the difference might just come down to it works for you more than it works for me. And that's fine.
Yeah, we do go back to the office though straight after that with him walking into Vince's office or like the outer part of his office, and his three secretaries are there. He asks them what they do. One gets Vince's coffee. They've all got these different jobs, and you know they end up getting him. You know what the first one asks him is, "Can I get you a coffee?" "No, can I have a beer?" The second one, "Can I get you something to eat?" "Well, yeah, my stomach's rumbling. I'll have another beer." And then the third one, she's just like, "Can I get you a beer too?" And he like fobs it off.
No, he says, no, you can't get me another beer, honey. I'll have a crown in seven.
Yeah, he was Crown 7 cents. So he just kind of fobs her off at the end. And but what was kind of fun about it was like he
Well, no,
looked.
he's gonna also have whiskey
No,
because he's Austin.
but what was good about it is that he was looking at him as if to say, "Why does this guy have three assistants? Like, why do they? Why
Well,
does he? Why?"
that was the brilliant thing in the segment, right? Is like Vince McMahon is such a douchebag that he has a specific assistant to get him coffee, and then another specific assistant to get him wine, and then another specific assistant to be backup to the coffee and wine getters.
I mean, look, I'm someone who enjoys specific food and drinks, but I would happily have one person who can do all of it for me. And if I'm
Like, I
Vince
feel
McMahon, I
like
can
you
pay.
would be okay, pedestrian enough to have just one person to get you both your mac and cheese and your vodka.
Well, the person would have to know that I want my mac and cheese with chips, and I want a Diet Iron Brew, and then when I'm done with that, I want that taken away, and then I want my vodka. So, you know, they would
Obviously.
get to know my processes. But then
I feel like I could be your assistant. I know these things about you.
No, you're too snarky. You would say that you would say an underhanded comment and it would just take away the whole thing. But the other thing is,
Okay.
even if I had money, I don't feel like I feel like I'd feel too bad asking someone to get me something like that. Like I'd be
Right?
like or I'd be like, "Oh, would you mind? Like, would even if I'm paying them, I'd be like, "Would you mind getting this thing?" And like even if I'm on tour, somebody will ask me, "Oh, can I get you something?" And I'm like trying to be as nice as I humanly can because I don't want it to seem like it's a demeaning thing that I'm asking someone to do something. Or like I'll say to Jen something like, "Oh, do you mind getting the Nando's order for the rest of whatever?" And I'm like, "Is that okay?" And she went, "Well, yeah. Why would it not be okay?" But anyway, it's a whole thing. So Road Dogg comes out with a dog collar around his neck. He threatens to kick Mr. Ass's ass. And then Billy Gunn comes down with a neck brace on. Did you see what it said in the back of his Mr. Ass t-shirt?
No, I didn't. What did it say?
"I've got four words for you. Check out my ass."
He's really just all in on this ass situation, isn't he?
He really is. But Road Dogg sees through it and basically says, you know, "Kane, go back there." And then Mr. Ass jerks his neck to prove that he doesn't actually have an injury. So
It's
the
just,
ref.
it reminds me of, in Wrestling Isn't Wrestling when they're introducing DX. And it's like, my name's Road Dogg. My thing is I spell my name. And, my name's Billy Gunn. My thing is I have a butt. I didn't realize just how on point that was.
He had researched the fuck out of that when he made that. It was very much
Right?
on point. So Billy Gunn ends up attacking Road Dogg. And then the match starts. Road Dogg is kind of got the upper hand. Then China comes down. She interferes. But there's no DQ in these kind of matches. That allows Mr. Ass to hit the Famouser. And he gets the win. So 1-2-3. Mr. Ass gets the win over Road Dogg. What did you make of this and the China involvement?
This was fun. I like China getting involved. I think China getting involved made it more fun than it would have been otherwise. I mean, dog collar matches and stuff can tend to be a bit dull if they're not going to be super brutal or interesting or whatever. And we've seen Road Dogg and Billy Gunn face each other before. The sort of mystique of New Age Outlaw versus New Age Outlaw has worn off at this point because we've kind of seen it. So it added a different element to have China come out. This is where I was a little confused about Mr. Ass's alliance slash association with the corporate ministry, because it seemed like obviously if China is interfering on his behalf, then it seems like he's at least on side with the corporate ministry, if not in the corporate ministry itself. So I wasn't sure about the relationship there. And it made it a little bit confusing, but I don't know. It worked fine. It didn't go on too long. And the thing is, I like Billy Gunn. So it's nice to, we were just talking about on Heat how he just loses. it's nice to see Billy Gunn not just lose another thing because he's supposed to be the guy that they want to go with. So it's just kind of baffling that we've seen him be kind of nothing. So it's nice to see him get one up, I guess. And I thought Chyna actually did pretty well when she was using the chain to hit Road Dogg, because Chyna's often not the most effective when it comes to doing physical things to other people. And I thought she actually looked pretty decent doing this.
Then we had Shamrock arriving, and Slaughter tells him that, you know, he has police as an escort, and Shamrock's like, if these, unless they're arresting me, they can fuck off, essentially. So
Shamrock's the best.
He is great. The Rock comes out in one of my favorite shirts of all time. It is amazing.
It is a marvel of pointy shoulders and such a big collar. He looks like a square, a big purple square.
He's an enigma. So The Rock comes out, and so there's, I mean, you won't really know this, I guess, because you didn't watch the time period, but Rock and Undertaker are two guys who never really, like, nobody remembers them facing each other. They only really face each other twice in the history of WWE that people really remember. Like, they faced once in 2002 and one in King of the Ring 99. That's the two times they really had stuff. But nobody really remembers them as being people that ever were in a feud together. So I'd forgotten about this promo. So Rock comes out and says that, you know, he basically wants to beat up The Undertaker, wants it at the pay-per-view. Taker comes out with Paul Bearer. There's this great kind of like subtlety where Undertaker's just standing there, and you just see out of camera shot of Paul Bearer just putting the microphone at Undertaker's mouth so he can just speak without having to hold a microphone. And then Undertaker says one of my favorite lines of all time, "I've crippled more people than polio."
Yeah, I noticed that line too. I looked at Mr. Sandra and said, did he just inform us that he has crippled more people than polio and use those words to describe that situation? And Mr. Sandra said, yes, indeed he did. And I said, that's not really a great thing to brag about. And The Undertaker is not a very good person.
He was saying about, you know, Rock's writing checks at his ass can't cash. You know, he's talking about the nursery rhymes. He basically says that he accepts the challenge and he's going to face him at King of the Ring. And then Vince comes out, tells Undertaker to back off, and he's like, you know, you're not worthy of being the champion or challenger for it. So tonight, you're gonna have to beat the Undertaker to get the title shot. And then Vince said? He said something like, the only thing you are worthy of is that gaudy shirt that you wear or whatever. Like, he made some sort of comment about his shirt. So Vince McMahon is making fashion critiques of other people.
I mean, I feel like this is Shawn Michaels and his belly button ring all over again.
It's deja vu. And then like,
was it in this promo where they talk about like all the asses are going to be standing up in the crowd or something like that too?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah. This promo was just was full of gems.
And then there's a weird bit where like Shane McMahon stops the music and says like, "If you smell what the Macs are cooking," and then I mean, this was like rubbish, but in a way that I love. So it kind of hit the spot for maybe the wrong reason for me. What did you make of this weird promo?
It just made me shake my head so much, especially because the end result, Kenny, is what's one of my least favorite WWE tropes, is having a match to determine if we're going to have a match. Like, we're having Rock versus Undertaker to determine if we're going to have Rock versus Undertaker for the title at, I almost just said Stomping Ground. No, it is 1999, King of the Ring. So, I mean, good to know WWE tropes have been alive and well for way too long. But this promo was just an enigma. Like, I just kept tilting my head at certain lines and going like,
crippled more people than polio.
Coming out of these humans' mouths? Like, how? Like, how are these the highest paid wrestlers in your company? And this is what's happening. I was just baffled by the whole thing. The Rock's shirt just, I felt like it took on a life of its own. I felt like it was just, it was another character in the promo for me. It was impressive in all of the ways. I don't know. Like, I'm just baffled by this. Like, how do words like that get on television? How do you say I've crippled more people than polio and have that be okay?
I also love that the Undertaker, you know, the character of the Undertaker, you know, like in his theme tune at the beginning, it's him going, oh, man, oh, blah, or whatever, right?
And he just comes out in his vest.
But he comes out in his vest and just starts calling Rock boy. And so this is the beginning of Undertaker losing his connection to the death world. Like,
well, and
gone.
Mr. Sandra actually made a comment. He was like, Because when Undertaker comes out here, like, he just walks out, right? Like, he just walks out with Paul Bearer. And that's fine, because I think that, you know, the Undertaker kind of needs an evolution of character, and dark, spooky, creepy, sacrificey Undertaker I'm kind of done with. So, like, him just kind of becoming more of a dude and becoming more human, I see where that evolution is going. But Mr. Sandra did make a comment, like, it's crazy to watch this versus how elaborate and crazy his entrances are now. And I was like, well, they were more elaborate and crazy before this too. It's just now he couldn't be bothered today or something. I don't know. Like, there's not really been an explanation for that character shift, but it does feel like it's organic. So I think that's good. I think maybe it's when the corporate ministry merged, right? And the corporation was like, look, the last time you did a blood sacrifice, it got all over the paperwork. And we had to recopy everything, and that costs money. It's really affecting our bottom line here. So we need you to calm down a little bit. We're not going to make you dress up in a suit or anything like that, but if you could, like, calm down the Satan worship, or at least, like, keep it to your own little section, then that would be better. I feel like the corporation has affected the Undertaker.
Yeah, I feel you're right. I feel like it's there's a weird thing as well where Undertaker right now, I'm pretty sure he's got like some pretty bad injuries. Like pretty bad injuries. And what you will see over the next couple of months, and I'm not making this up, is he starts to put on a fair amount of weight. And by the time we get to SummerSlam, he has a gut. He has a proper,
Really?
and it's this weird thing where like I knew we you knew from reading Powerslam and stuff that by like June he was injured. So it was like he's gonna take some time off soon. But he sticks around until like September because he's like trying to. I don't know if he's trying to work through it or why he decided to stick around so long. But yeah, it's just a weird. It's a weird time, and it gets weirder.
It's kind of baffling to me because I was thinking about it watching this episode of Raw, that Stone Cold Steve Austin and all of his shenanigans are quite separate from the episode, right? Like, they kind of exist out with the world of Raw, except at the end when, you know, he dumps shit in the office and Vince McMahon has to react to it. But all of the Steve Austin shenanigans make sense because Austin is also injured at this point, correct?
Yes.
So, I mean, taking the title off of Austin, just in my head, I'm like, it makes sense to take the title off of Austin because he's injured, and then he can be a part of the show, and he can be CEO, and he can go to the offices, and he can, you know, run things that way. And, you know, I don't know how everything plays out with him being CEO. I only knew that him being CEO happened. And now that it has happened, I don't really know anything else about what happened. Like, I'm kind of curious to see what happens with Stone Cold Steve Austin as CEO. But, like, that makes sense to me, right? Because if he's injured, you want to have him not in as much of an in-ring capacity. You don't want to have him being the champion because he has all these injuries and stuff. So why would you take the belt off Stone Cold Steve Austin and then put it on The Undertaker, who's also dealing with a lot of nagging injuries?
I mean, I think Austin wasn't so bad right now, but I think you can definitely see they try to not have him wrestle on TV a lot. They kind of try and have him do different things. But yeah, but like, it's funny, like Austin's so over because partially he does get to do other stuff. He doesn't have to have matches all the time. Like there's not the people who get to do more out of ring stuff and kind of develop their characters are the people that get more over. So it's not a coincidence. So up next we have for the WWF Women's Championship. Deborah defending her title against Ivory. I was watching this with Steve Gunn, and he was like, "Is that what Deborah's wearing to wrestle?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, it's Deborah." Like, and he was like, "But she has heels on." And I was like, "Well, what do you think Deborah plans to do in here? Like, she's not going to do any wrestling moves." So Nicole Bass comes down during the match. The match goes about a minute and a half, and like, I enjoyed it, and I feel like. I don't know what that means, if it means I've lost my mind, but I like the fact that Deborah can't wrestle, so she just choked Ivory. Ivory's doing these mad, like, you know, whips over with Deborah, and then Nicole Bass just comes down and chokes Deborah. Ivory rolls it up, Ivory gets the win, and Ivory's just causing it, flinging her belt up like, yes! She's finally going to get to wrestle. I enjoyed it, I don't know why, but Ivory's now the women's champion. Are you happy about this, Sandra?
I'm so happy about this. I am so happy about this. I expected Deborah to be women's champion until I die, basically. And I know that that wasn't going to happen, but I had it in my head that this was not going to end anytime soon. I had the kind of a Goldberg light heavyweight champion type run for Deborah in my head, just because I couldn't hope for better, because then I would just be disappointed. And I didn't hope for better, and then I got better, and I'm so happy that Ivory is the champion. I am confused about alignment. So Ivory is a heel again right now, right? Like, because Deborah's supposed to be a heel, but she's such a babyface because the crowd always wants to see her. And I'm just kind of confused about that, because Nicole Bass coming out and choking Deborah and then allowing Ivory to get the win. Like, it's a very heelish way to win the title, but like, I'm so happy that Ivory's the champion and Deborah's supposed to be a heel because she's like with dastardly Jeff Jarrett and always kind of like distracting referees and stuff. I could do without Jerry Lawler on commentary. I could really do without Jerry Lawler on commentary saying things like, I could handle carpet stains from those puppies. Die in a fire, kindly, sir. I just cannot with you. But this wasn't terrible. It wasn't like, I think it's atrocious that Deborah is wearing what she's wearing to wrestle. I think her heels are atrocious. I think she looks like such not a wrestler because she's not a wrestler, right? And so for the wrestler to win the title makes me happy. I don't know why Ivory would need help from Nicole Bass to win the title from Deborah, because Ivory could do like a wrestling move to Deborah and should be able to win the title, but whatever. Like, I'm happy that Deborah's not the champion anymore. I'm happy that Ivory is the champion. I want to see actual wrestling matches. I know that Ivory's not like the best at this point, but you know, like, she's actually a wrestler.
Well, the thing is, if she has the belt and she's a wrestler, you can do more things with it.
Exactly. Because, I mean, so far it's been Sable and Deborah.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, like, Deborah, I think Deborah's a really good character. I mean, Deborah comes out later on while Jeff Jarrett has a match, and she literally shows no effect that she has lost a championship today.
No, she doesn't care.
So, but yeah, so Ivory's now the champion, and we can move on to... So
And do we have an alliance with Ivory and Nicole Bass? Like, I'm intrigued by this. I did not expect, Kenny, I did not expect to be as intrigued by Nicole Bass as I am. And I don't know if it's just because, like, I hate the treatment of her on television and I hate the way they talk about her, but like, I kind of really like her as a character. And when they showed her again, like, they showed the guitar shot to Val Venus and her telling Val Venus, you know, screw you. I'm like, on your side, Nicole. Like, I love her. I really, really like her. And
well, she,
I the
whole,
for her.
The whole thing is because Ivy's supposed to be Mark Henry and D'Lo, and I can't remember if they explain it, but basically when Ivory wins the women's belt, it's almost like she no longer exists with them. And that's just okay. Kind of that done. Nicole Bass and Ivory are going to have a brief alliance because of this, but it's at this point where Nicole Bass leaves the WWF and files the lawsuit for sexual harassment.
Okay, because I didn't know how long that was, because I knew Nicole Bass wasn't around for very long, which I think is a shame.
Because Nicole ends up going on to say that she was sexually assaulted by Steve Lombardi.
Okay.
The Brooklyn Brawler, and the case ends up in 2003 getting dismissed as a trial. So, but that is what happens. But she leaves shortly after this, so don't get too into the partnership because it's not going to last too long. But I think it has a fun dynamic. There's kind of like a little bit of a Shawn and Diesel thing about it. Mm-hmm. You know, like Ivory's the wrestler who can go and can fight her own battles, but she doesn't even want to. She just wants to use a bodyguard to do it for her. And even this particular week, as we're, you know, in 1999, in The Observer, it said that Nicole Bass, along with Mariana Komlos, the Mrs. Cleavage woman, and another woman called Shannon Hall, who's a former model, cheerleader, and boxer, they were all at a Tom Pritchard training camp this week to train to be in-ring performers eventually. So
okay.
We go back to the office. It's Austin's in a meeting. He's got cases of Bush Light. He's given them his Austin 316 magazine that was released in shops as a manual that they need to memorize. He fires a guy who is the head of market research. He promotes the mail clerk to for no reason. He then tells all of them.
I love that he promotes the mail clerk to guy who gets him beer.
Yep, that's the job role. And he ends up just throwing all of them loads of beers and says, you're going to have a beer drinking contest. If you pass out or puke or are stumbling around, you're fired. If you're still standing, you keep your job. And he leaves. This was great. Again.
This is awesome. I mean, other than the beer choice, because Busch Light, ugh. But
when he opens the briefcase of beer, it ended me.
No, but it's the briefcase. Isn't that the same briefcase that... Well, it's not, because I think that there was Natty Light inside that briefcase. But Steve Austin does have a briefcase perfectly suited to beer, because he got it as a present from Linda McMahon and Stephanie McMahon last week.
Mm-hmm. Continuity.
It's continuity. Like, I love this. I love this scene. I thought it was brilliant. I loved him asking everyone to like explain their job descriptions, just firing the one guy because why not? And was JR like, he's been here 9 years.
And when the head of marketing research gets fired, Jim Ross is like, always hated that guy.
Yeah.
Although I will say, if you watch these segments, like, so even if you, like, if you usually you listen to this show but you don't watch the episodes, go and watch this episode and just skim through the Austin office stuff. Like, there is no diversity hires whatsoever. It is white man America. Like,
it is so many white dudes in this boardroom, which is why, like, the mail clerk looks to be a person of color. And I appreciate that the mail clerk was promoted to this boardroom because, like, it's just all old white dudes in suits. And the mail clerk guy, who is now the beer getter, because when Stone Cold snaps his fingers, there better be a beer and it better be open. You know, like, I appreciate that.
Then we come back and we have, so Patterson had been trying to leave during the break. Briscoe says, you look, do you want him to win? Patterson's like, no, but how much can I take? And Briscoe's like, I've got a plan, come on, let's go. So Patterson comes back in, and you know, that there's little things like that that you can do on these shows. And you know, this is the Stooges, right? It's not a big part of the show. It's not a part that's going to be like, you know, the biggest stars. But by just doing this like 30-second thing, you're giving motivations to people and you're giving reasons as to why, and that's something you don't get now, and it's really frustrating. And it doesn't take long. And it's just kind of unacceptable.
Well, it's world building, right? Like, it's making things feel like a fully formed world, and it's making the characters make sense, which is great. And like, because Mr. Sonder actually asked me when the Stooges came out before and were kind of confronting Vince in the ring, he's like, aren't the Stooges with Vince? Because, you know, he doesn't watch every episode of Retro Raw that I watch. And I was like, no, because they were with Vince until Vince was revealed as the greater power. But because Vince was revealed as the greater power, and because like he had, you know, bamboozled everyone and hoodwinked them and was a terrible, dastardly person. Well, now the Stooges are questioning Vince McMahon.
Well, because they got beat up by the ministry because of Vince.
Of course. Like, so, all of the stuff that Vince did was against them too. I mean, I still say the greater power thing makes no sense, because what was his end goal? Like, what did he even accomplish with this nothing? But whatever, I suppose we shouldn't dwell. But no, I really like the thing with the Stooges.
I do want to say this, though. In the Observer this week, there was a note on the higher power, or the greater power. It said, apparently the plan for Vince to be the higher power wasn't decided until the last minute, as several were considered. Mick Foley was among those asked, and he turned it down, as the plan apparently was to turn a top babyface heel. So, my question to you would be, if the choices are Vince or Mick, who do you pick?
That's tough.
Because essentially, if we were saying, okay, they did have another idea, right? Let's say they didn't have the Vince idea, and their other idea was Mick Foley. Which one is the better choice?
Mick Foley also doesn't make sense, though.
Well, no, neither of them make sense. I'm just trying to figure out which one is less terrible as an idea.
I feel like, oh, it's tough because Mick Foley had all that stuff with The Rock and had all that stuff with The Undertaker. So, like, none of that would make sense if he were orchestrating it. Like, why would he be orchestrating his own pain? Although maybe it's Mick Foley and that's what he does. Maybe you could have made slightly more sense out of it, but I think Vince might be the better choice out of those two. Like, why do they have the most horrendous choices ever?
Finn made a good point, actually, on the Overrun, I think it was, where we were talking about it, and he said, you know, the thing is, they wanted to go back to Austin McMahon. That was what they wanted to get back to, and they had to find a way to get back to it. But, I mean, for me, I would have been like, well, you could have got back to it, but you could have found a way to tell another 6 months worth of stories to get back to it.
Right.
But
instead of just, like, this halt, stop, making everything not matter situation that they did.
I did mean to say earlier on when I was talking about Heat, and I said we had the debut of Too Much, or so Too Cool, who used to be Too Much. That was filmed on like a week ago, even though it aired on the 13th of June. It was filmed a couple of, so when that went out, that 13th of June Heat was filmed on like June the 7th or something, like earlier on. Then a house show on, what was the date of the house show? Let me get it here. On a house show in Portland on the 9th of June, Brian Christopher blew out his ACL. So he's going to be undergoing surgery this month. So now they're gone for 6 months.
So, oh, that's a bummer.
So, and I didn't remember that they had started the gimmick before they left and then came back. So, yeah, so they're gone for 6 months. So, just as they put that new team together, or the new, you know, the new gimmick that they had, they're out for 6 months. So,
yeah, that's a bummer. I mean, I know that they do come back as that gimmick, but still.
Then we have Tess versus the Big Boss Man. Tess get the blindfold on. Boss Man basically knocks him out with a nightstick. DQ. Stephanie then runs down to protect Tess, and Boss Man decides that it's not a good idea to get through the boss's daughter to try and get to Tess, so he leaves. What did you make of the idea of, you know, we've seen Tess kind of be the gentleman on Heat with him kind of saying, you know, we're just friends, I'm not going to tell you details. Now she's coming out to try and protect him and stop our dad's henchmen from trying to beat him up. How's the story working for you so far?
I mean, it's sweet. It's fine. I can't say that I'm like super invested in Stephanie McMahon and Tess yet, but it's fine. And it's kind of nice to see a storyline with a woman and a man where it's not, I don't know, stalking and harassment and sexual abuse. And so maybe my bar isn't high for Retro Raw, but that's refreshing. Yeah, it's fine. I this whole thing, like a blindfold match, this is one of the ones that when they were making the opening, like making the matches in the opening promo, I was just like, are you serious? Like a blind date match, because test and dating and a blindfold and blah. I don't want to see a blindfold match. What even is the point of this? And it just makes me laugh because the Big Boss Man is like the least effective henchman, right? Because he yells at Test in the ring so Test can like spear at him or whatever, because he can tell where he is because the Boss Man won't shut up. I love it. It was just like, it made me laugh. And then the Boss Man just getting tired of it and be like, no, fuck this, and hits him with the nightstick. I love the Big Boss Man. I love him so much.
Then we cut back to Stamford, Connecticut, where we have Austin entering HR. He introduces himself, gets the HR assistant to go and get him a beer. He tells the new HR guy about the manual he has to read. He's going to come back and quiz him, and then he basically says, you know, I'm going to give you a quiz now on one of my catchphrases. Austin 316 says, and the guy goes, I just whooped your... and doesn't want to say the word. So Austin gets him to say it. He says it, but he doesn't say it with enough conviction. So he finally gets this tiny old white man to stand up and go, says I whipped your ass, and then walks out with this mad swagger as they drink beer.
I think the tiny white man you are referring to is Matt DeLuca, hero of my life, absolute legend of the World Wrestling Federation. Where has he been all our lives? Like, why is he not in George and Adam segments? I love this man. I absolutely love this man. I do not appreciate Stone Cold Steve Austin telling the female HR specialist to go and get him beer. Like, he already has multiple people for that. Like, where is Mailroom Guy? Like, why is he not following him and getting him beer? Like, I don't really like, oh, female employee, I'm going to dismiss you and make you go get something for me. And she did look affronted. She was like, what the hell? This is not my job.
I will say this, though. I feel like from all the way, I don't feel that was particularly a female thing. You know, he was bossing people about of both sexes. He wasn't doing it to just one person. If that had been the only time where he had bossed someone about, then I'd be like, yeah, you know, that's harsh. But I feel like he did that before, and he was just going to do that throughout the show. I don't think they put across very well who she was, or because it just looked like she was an extra. And 20 years later, it just looks like it makes it seem like if it was a guy sitting there, it would have been easier to digest, I guess, in some ways.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, and that's just like kind of a minor nitpick. But oh my gosh, Matt DeLuca is fantastic. They have the cutout of Stone Cold Steve Austin. This is my favorite one of all of these segments.
He's got the tie on.
I'm sorry. He's got the tie. He had the cutout of Stone Cold Steve Austin. He had the Stone Cold Steve Austin tie on. And then, like, he thought Stone Cold was going to hit him. Did you see when he, like, put his leg up and was trying to, like, block his face? And he couldn't do it. And he was kind of like half smiling at the same time. And he was just, Austin's like, I'm not going to hit you. I'm not going to hit you. And, you know, Matt DeLuca, it is Matt, right? Like, I typed it to you.
Yeah, yeah, Matt DeLuca, yeah.
Yeah, because I made sure to, like, have his name in my mind because I was like, I love this man. And him just being like, I'm going to whoop your ass or whatever. And then, like, the swagger as he follows Stone Cold out. I mean, like, you think Vince McMahon has a funny walk? No, no. Sign up Matt DeLuca for the Ministry of Funny Walks, because he was fantastic here. He played his role to perfection. I love him. He is a legend. I want more of him in these segments.
Then we get X-Pac versus Big Show. Big Show comes out and is like, you know, I don't want any part of this. The X-Pac's like, look, I'm a man. This has been booked. Like, I'm not going to shy away from it. Let's fight. So he then, you know, kicks Big Show, who just tosses him over the top rope with ease. Kane comes out. Kane pulls X-Pac off the apron, gets in the ring. It all kind of flips off where Kane then hits X-Pac. X-Pac hits Kane. X-Pac then does a spinning kick to Big Show, who kind of falls over the top rope. And Big Show just kind of goes, I'm over this. I'm not doing it. And leaves. And but, I mean, again, Kane coming to the save of X-Pac. Friendship. I appreciate friendship.
Friendship, but also with kind of deeper storytelling here. I actually really liked the segment quite a bit. X-Pac's kind of great, right? Like, at this point, X-Pac being mm-hmm. the valiant guy who's like, you know, no, well, I was signed up for this match. I know that you're way bigger than me, but I want to fight you because that's my job and I'm going to get my ass kicked and I understand that, but like, I want to fight and he's little and scrappy. I love that. That's a character I can get behind, right? Like, it's the Daniel Bryan, Sami Zayn sort of mentality that I really appreciate. Big Show is harder to get behind as a babyface because I know he's supposed to come off as valiant, like, I don't want to beat you up, little friend. But he also comes across more as bored and doesn't want to be there because his general demeanor on these shows is bored and doesn't want to be there. But, you know, it's fine. And, like, they start the match and he's just kind of like, dude, like, I can ruin you because I'm very large and you're not very large. And so Kane coming down to save X-Pac is nice in terms of friendship, but X-Pac kind of seems to be affronted by it in a way because he's like, no, I said I was going to fight my own battle. I said I was going to fight the Big Show tonight. For Kane to come in and sort of assume that X-Pac can't do it on his own, or for him to insert himself in the match, because they say at one point, like, Kane has just made himself in the match instead, which I don't know how you can really do that, but also 1999, so whatever. But, you know, like, Kane inserting himself in the match in Big Show's place, X-Pac was kind of offended by that. He was like, no, I want to fight my own battles. So for Kane and X-Pac to kind of be at odds there is interesting storytelling for me, because it's not just like one friend turns on the other. It's like, no, why don't you believe in me? And Kane is like, why don't you want my help? I can help you out of this bad situation. That's some real life drama there, and I appreciated it. And then the Big Show just fucks off because he's the Big Show.
Yeah, he does. He does. In his tiny pants.
Yes.
Ken Shamrock's getting put in his straitjacket. He says that he's going to kill Slaughter once he's done with Jeff Jarrett and anyone else who gets in his way. He screams in Tim White's face and Tim White shits himself, and I really appreciated it. It made me laugh.
It's great. I love Ken Shamrock. I love him so much. And, like, him just kind of going after Slaughter, I was like, oh, yeah, Slaughter. What's he been up to?
Who looks like he's aged 10 years and 10 months.
Yeah, somehow. And he looked old before.
So, Jeff Jarrett versus Ken
Maybe it's because he wasn't wearing the hat.
True. And maybe he hasn't had any more boot camp matches to keep his cardio up.
It's true.
Jeff Jarrett versus Ken Shamrock's up next. Shamrock's in the straitjacket. Jarrett's avoiding kicks from Shamrock. Jarrett tackles him, but he's then put in a leg hold. Jarrett's able to stomp on Shamrock. He pulls him over the side of the apron, hits him with elbows to the throat. Shamrock then drops him and then chokes him out with head scissors, and he wins. He manages to beat Jeff Jarrett in a straitjacket. Vince yep. runs down, punches the referee, and then is run off. This was so much fun.
It was a blast. I really enjoyed it. I mean, there's a part of my brain going, this is so hokey and so ridiculous. And you can tell, like, I think because it was on the same show as, like, a blindfold and a dog collar and everything all at once, it was kind of like, okay, of course, a straitjacket. But Ken Shamrock sells the shit out of that straitjacket. He is still crazy enough to beat Jeff Jarrett despite not having the use of his arms. I mean, he does kind of, like, grip a little bit with his arm. Like, I don't really know how it worked, but he seemed to kind of, like, I mean, I know it's because Jeff Jarrett is a professional and is working with Ken Shamrock, but, like, he seemed to kind of get him into the triangle at one point where Jeff Jarrett, like, his arm was kind of trapped as well. Yeah, this was a lot of fun, and Angry Ken Shamrock is my favorite Ken Shamrock, and Angry Ken Shamrock in a straitjacket having to get out of the straitjacket after was great. Vince McMahon coming down, and because did Ken Shamrock win? Like, did they ring the bell? I'm trying to remember. Or did Vince punch the referee before the decision could be rendered?
No, I think he won.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't remember. But yeah, either way, like, Ken Shamrock beating Jeff Jarrett in a straitjacket, despite Jeff Jarrett also having Deborah on the outside, it was a lot of fun. I can't lie. I enjoyed it. Ken Shamrock's the best.
He is great. We get a GTV of Mr. Ass getting his ass shaved by a woman. He's not happy about the job that she did, and he threatens her that she might not get the chance to shave his ass again.
I mean, so what a
much,
loss.
So much ass play.
So much ass play. And like the whole thing is, oh, I see a pimple on your ass. And he's like, there cannot be a pimple on this gorgeous ass. This is my livelihood. I don't tell anyone about the pimple on my ass. Is this supposed to be funny? Because it didn't play as funny. It just played as boring.
It was just weird. Just very
Yeah.
weird. Pat Patterson and Gerald Briscoe take on Midian and Viscera, but as the Midian and Viscera are on their way down, so Patterson and Briscoe get chairs. I guess that's their plan. And as Midian and Viscera are coming down, the Mean Street Posse attack them from behind, and then basically it's the four of them beating them up. They're doing squashes. At one point, Viscera does a squash, and Jim Ross says, and I quote, "That's the oldest man that's ever been on top of Patterson."
Yep. He does. Okay, but he like he squashes like he splashes Pat Patterson's head.
I mean, it's Viscera. I'm not expecting any form of real technical ability. Like, he even fucks up a splash.
I mean, it just it was something. It was definitely
You've
something.
heard the story about what he did to Kevin Nash. No, Undertaker,
No.
Undertaker, where he leg dropped the Undertaker and almost broke his orbital bone.
Oh, I have heard this. Yes.
Because then Undertaker had to wear the Phantom of the Opera mask.
Yep, I have heard about this. 'Cause I've seen the image of him in the Phantom of the Opera mask.
And then he almost broke. He almost like yeah. He like sat on Kevin Nash when he had a back injury, and Kevin Nash was like enraged because he could have broken his back. But then
Wow.
they hired him back and had him squash an old guy. Anyway,
Baffling. Absolutely
do
baffling.
you
I mean,
know?
this was basically just shenanigans with the Mean Street Posse and stuff. I like the Mean Street Posse, so I was happy to see them.
Do you know that at this point in 1999, that Pat Patterson is younger than Kevin Bacon is now?
Really?
Kevin Bacon's 60 years old.
I didn't know he was 60.
Pat Patterson's supposed to be 58 here.
That's crazy to me.
And also,
That
Pat
also
Pat.
means Kevin Bacon is my dad's age. Interesting.
There you go. So we see Rock pacing in the back. We go back to Austin. He's being led by Matt DeLuca as they're toasting beers.
Seriously, absolute legend. Absolute legend, Matt DeLuca. Love him so much. I hope that he didn't like come out as like some terrible pedo or something at some point, because all I know of him is from these segments.
Knowing our luck, that's what he would be when it. But he goes
In
to.
the event that Matt DeLuca was found to not be a very good person, I rescind everything I said here. I just really enjoyed his funny walk.
He's not a pedo. It's fine. Don't worry. I'm gonna Google Matt DeLuca pedo and make sure we're okay. that's part of my search now. Hang on, Matt DeLuca, WWF. Let's see what comes up. Oh wow, there's like a photo of him.
Really?
There's a photo of him now. Matthew DeLuca. He now is a professor. No, he's an ad. A, how do you pronounce this word? ADJUNCT.
Adjunct.
Adjunct. He's an adjunct instructor at NYU.
Oh, so he's a really smart dude.
Professor
Oh
DeLuca.
yeah. Aw, look at his wee face.
Oh, Matt. Anyway,
He's
so.
just he's he became my favorite part of this episode. I'm sorry. I just think he's great. Oh, there's like a video of him teaching.
So, Austin and Matt DeLuca are drinking beers. Austin gets taken to accounting. He wants to look at the books. He ends up seeing some losses. He questions them, and it's in the Zamboni and the beer destruction scene. He just brushes past it. So
Did
good.
you notice though when he gets to accounting, the accountant goes, "Well, which set of books do you want to see?" And it just reminded me of the producers. Like, ooh, do they have multiple sets of books here in the World Wrestling Federation? Because that wouldn't be shocking at all.
It's so good. And then.
But yeah, I like that the line items for the Zamboni.
So then, but then he sees Vince and Shane's salary. He wants them changed. Shane's salary is now going to be the beer budget, which is just great. So these continue to be fantastic segments.
And he says to take a couple zeros off of Vince McMahon's salary, add it to Mick Foley's salary because he needs some help with medical bills. So Stone Cold Steve Austin is all about helping the people.
Yeah, well, there's always like Austin. Austin will do the right thing, but he doesn't want to be like chummy, chummy, you know? Which is
No,
like.
but I really liked that being thrown in there though, Mick Foley specifically, because Mick Foley is off of TV right now and is dealing with, actual medical stuff.
Yeah, but
And
that's what
so
I mean.
for him to throw that in, it just felt like a personal like shout out to Mick Foley from Steve Austin, and I appreciated it.
I always like the way that Austin We'd do the right thing for Mick Foley throughout the years, but like he, if it ever got to the point where Mick Foley was like, "Hey, let's be friends," he's like, "Fuck off. I don't want to be. I'll do the right thing, but that's as far as I'm going." Up next, we get Kane versus the Acolytes, where Kane's got to kind of try and keep up with the two of them. He does pretty well. He's got a lot of control during most of the match, but towards the end, he's going after Farouk, and then Bradshaw comes in and hits him with a chair. Then they do a double finish to him and get the 1-2-3. X-Pac runs down with a chair and gets rid of the Acolytes, and that was that. So I actually thought this was pretty decent for having the Acolytes involved, and I think Kane and X-Pac and is working with the Acolytes, a testament to how good they are as a team, and their story is that I feel like they've been responsible for the most interesting stuff the Acolytes have ever done, which I guess
definitely.
I still
prefer not to see the Acolytes, kind of, but this wasn't terrible. Like, this was not as terrible as I thought it was going to be. Like, Kane in a handicap match for the tag team titles against the Acolytes. I really wanted Kane to win so badly. Of course I did. And, you know, for X-Pac to kind of, and for them to kind of resolve some of their earlier dissension, for X-Pac to be like, "Hey, I'm going to help you out here," kind of. It's good storytelling. And X-Pac and Kane as a team, like, it's something that even though they're not the champions anymore, I still want to see more of them.
And also, it's clever to build up, if you've got a team like the Acolytes who, you know, they're not great or whatever, it is clever to use one of your babyface teams to kind of get them better, but without it being in your face. And, you know, I get it. It makes sense. We see Shamrock backstage. He breaks free from the jacket. He's going crazy. We then go back to the headquarters, and we see Austin have, he says this, he's in Vince's office, and we see all this stuff Vince got up in his walls or whatever, and it's like plaques and magazine covers and all this stuff, and Austin says this
awards that Vince has given to himself,
all the usual stuff. So they end up, Austin ends up bringing in all these guys' wheelbarrows to bring it. He says, "This room's so full of bullshit, let's have some more," and they bring in cow manure and they stack it up in his room, and then Austin pours beer over the top of it. So Vince and Shane, in a sense, they come out. They're not having this. So they come out, they said, "Right, that's it. The stipulation at King of the Ring is going to be we all put our stake in the company on the line. We put it up there and somebody has to climb up a ladder to get it. It's going to be a ladder match. That's going to be the stipulation." So what do you make of the stipulation? Is it what you thought it would be? Is there something better that you'd rather see? Or do you think that that's a good kind of hook for the show of, like, you know, we're going to commit to King of the Ring and somebody's going to own it, whether it's Austin or the McMahon's?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good stipulation if you're all in on this authority drama and shenanigans, which I'm not always the biggest fan of, like, ownership of a company being at stake, because it's just not for me all the time. But I think they're doing a decent job of telling this story, and you do definitely want Austin to come out on top, and you definitely don't want Shane and Vince to come out on top. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It's logical storytelling, and for it to be a ladder match makes sense as well, because it's, you know, you can hang a contract above a ladder. They go on to do that plenty in the World Wrestling Federation in years to come. So, yeah, like, it's fine. I can't say that I had any sort of, like, visceral reaction to it, but I was like, yeah, this seems like a logical next step. I mean, Austin dumping the you know, the bullshit in the office was kind of, like, my least favorite of the segments, because I was just like, okay, fine, like, you're ruining an office, but aren't you ruining your office? Like, isn't that supposed to be your office now? Like, what even are you doing? Now you're just going to have to clean that up, I guess, but maybe he just doesn't want to be in that office anymore. I don't really know. It was the one that I was just kind of like, yeah, that's fine. But
then also, after they say, "This is the stipulation to be a ladder match," and Vince was quite funny doing, you know, "You're going to have to grab it, Austin!" And, you know, he's doing his whole shebang. And then he says, "And onto the Rock," you know, the last stipulation, Shane's got the mic, and then Shamrock just charges down to the ring as fast as humanly possible. Vince, of course being Vince, shoves Shane into Shamrock. Shamrock murders Shane with a belly-to-belly suplex, and Vince takes off, sprinting up the ramp, and manages to get away in his limo. Ken Shamrock is the best.
Ken Shamrock is the best. I love him. I love that he's so insane and so strong that he was able to just break out of a straitjacket by flailing about a whole bunch, right? Like, he didn't have help getting out of that straitjacket because Vince McMahon, that's what it was. Vince McMahon punched the referee after the match because then he stole the key to the straitjacket.
So Shamrock couldn't
That
get
was the
out.
key. Yes, because I was trying to remember. I'm like, why did he punch the referee afterwards? I know that there was another detail. It was because he stole the key to the straitjacket because he didn't want Ken Shamrock to be let out of the straitjacket. But Ken Shamrock is so wily that he got out of the straitjacket on his own and decided to go and take retribution on those evil McMahons, who he still has issue with, like for not only the kidnapping of his sister, but also for like getting him involved and helping rescue Stephanie and all that kind of stuff. Like the history with Ken Shamrock being angry at Vince and Shane makes perfect sense in my mind. And Ken Shamrock's just the best, and I love him so much.
Then it comes to main event time. It's Rock versus Undertaker, and then Triple H comes down and says, I'm the stipulation, since you didn't get to hear it. It's a triple threat. You got to get through both of us. China and Paul Bearer on the outside. There's a moment where like China and Paul Bearer are talking, and Jim Ross is just like, oh, those two. You know, just like so disgusted by the two of them having like, you
and
know.
The two of them, like China and Paul Bearer having an interaction. That's just a sight, right? Like only in wrestling. Can you see someone like China talking to Paul Bearer, like just on the street?
No, it's a fascinating thing to look at. Just the two of them having a conversation. It's so good. So we have the match, and the match is fine. It's not great. It's not bad. It's just fine. But towards the end, it gets really fun because the idea is that you get Rock really trying to win this match. At one point, he gets the he does the Rock Bottom to Undertaker. He does the People's Elbow. He's going to win, and as he's about to get there, Triple H comes in and stops it. Or is it China comes in and stops it? One of them do. And then Rock's in there and with Undertaker, and Undertaker goes off the ropes, but China clips Undertaker's leg because she's turning the other way and she thinks it's the Rock. So then Undertaker gets clotheslined over the tops by the Undertaker, so he just starts choking China. Then Triple H tries grabbing Taker. Taker does like a kind of stunner off the apron. Triple H falls into a Rock Bottom. 1, 2, 3. And then Triple H and Undertaker start fighting. The Ministry's having a breakdown. The rest of them come out and try and break it up. But Rock gets the title shot at the pay-per-view. I'm with you about the beginning, you know, the whole kind of trope of like a match to get to a match, because then you're kind of like, I've just seen the match essentially. But I think they did a good job at the end with the shenanigans and making it feel like, and this is it, look at what they did here. It's not difficult to do this kind of stuff, and people were going crazy for it. If you give people this kind of stuff on a show, then they're gonna watch it and they're gonna like it. Whereas today, you know, it's like Baron Corbin or something. He's not doing enough fun stuff or giving us enough stuff to get interested in that we want to tune in every week. So we could miss 3 weeks worth of him doing anything and you've not missed anything. Whereas if you see 3 weeks of China, she's going to have done stuff over the 3 weeks that's worth checking out.
Yeah. And I mean, there were enough shenanigans here. It did kind of, so, I mean, cards on the table. I sort of missed the part where Triple H made it a triple threat. So I was a little confused during this match. I was like, when did it become a triple threat? Like, I went with it. I was like, okay, fine. It's a triple threat. I don't understand why. And like, I think because at the beginning, like all of the setting up of the stipulation and like the hook for the show was, we're only going to reveal the stipulation 5 minutes before this match because we are dastardly McMahons. Like all of that stuff worked a lot better for you than it did for me. So it just kind of like, it soured me on the whole process of this main event, I think. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, and again, like I'm not trying to like shit on it or anything. It just didn't work for me as well as it did for you. But yeah, like, there were so many shenanigans and so much stuff happening in this match that I just was kind of like, if we're doing all of this in the match to get to the match, like, what are we going to do in the match, right? Like, the actual Rock versus Undertaker title match. Like, it almost seemed like they were doing too much here and it felt out of place. Like, it felt out of balance because shouldn't, like, all of the really important and exciting and great stuff happen at the pay-per-view in the actual title match? Like, they're just trying to prevent The Rock from getting a title shot here. They're not even trying to prevent him from getting the title itself. So it just seemed like kind of a lot, but the shenanigans were really fun. I love China getting involved. China and Paul Bearer just being there. Paul Bearer holding the Undertaker's title all of the episode was just kind of a great visual. So yeah, there was some fun stuff about it, but it's, you know, it's The Rock and The Undertaker and Triple H in a match. That's, you know, that's going to be what it is. But it wasn't terrible or anything. It was kind of like, all right, I guess we're just going to try and get to The Rock versus The Undertaker. And I mean, Rock did have to overcome a lot of adversity here. And so that was good. And I did want The Rock to win more than I wanted Triple H or The Undertaker to win. So that was good. Like, at least for now, alignments are making sense to me. So that's a positive thing. I mean, The Rock's still kind of a douchebag and bless his shirt. But, you know, it was fine. It was fine.
Yeah, so overall, where would your thumb be for the show? Up, middle, or down?
It's a thumbs in the middle show for me, and it's hard because I enjoyed the Austin shenanigans so much, and I'm happy that Ivory's the champion. But I think because of the stuff I've been saying, like the authority stuff, and there just being too many stipulations on one show, and it all just feeling a little too wonky in some places, like there were just certain things that soured me on it. So it's a thumbs in the middle, but like not a negative one. It's a more positive thumbs in the middle.
Yeah, for sure. It was a thumbs up for me. I thought most of the stuff on the show worked, and I thought it didn't feel like I didn't get bored during the show. I thought that most of the stuff they built to made sense, and they had a lot of stories going through it that I liked, like X-Pac and Kane that spiraled those two matches. The Tess and Stephanie thing starting to build quite nicely. I liked the story of the Stooges. Ivory winning the title was good. I thought the main event shenanigans were decent. So overall, I thought most of it was pretty good, and the Austin stuff was great. So for me, it's a thumbs up. As we stroll on towards King of the Ring. There's a couple other little notes I was going to say. What else was I going to say? So there was apparently a really horrible piece of news coverage about the Owen Hart situation from the KSHP in Kansas City. They had an interview with a former wrestler called Wild Thing. His name's Stevie Ray, but it's not Harlem Heat Stevie Ray. And he was, they did an interview on the 6th of June where he had talked about he had friends that are insiders in the WWF because he works in the food supplement sales business. And he said that one of two things were the real story. That either, and I'm not making this up, he says that either because of Wrestle in the Shadows, that there's credence to the theory that Owen Hart may have been murdered.
What?
The station kind of threw out the allegedlys all over the place to protect themselves, because this was like on a radio show. And the other possibility is that Owen wasn't actually dead and would reappear on Raw in a new role, maybe being the higher power.
What?
Yep.
Like this was actually reported as news.
And it was like an interview with this guy, and this guy was saying this is what he thinks the situation is. One of these two
So
things.
he's basically the Alex Jones of the situation.
Yeah, Stevie Wild Thing Ray. As I say,
Fuck that guy.
not Harlem Heat
Fuck that
Stevie.
guy.
Do not message Stevie Ray from Harlem Heat. It's not him. There was also Vince McMahon's going to appear in Conan O'Brien on June 24th. I think it's actually on YouTube if anybody wants to check it out. What else is there? Also, Mark Henry's been encouraged to drop to £340 from 400 and been told he won't get a serious push until he does that. Steve Dr. Death Williams is still under contract. There's been at least some talk about bringing him back in September. He's got a guaranteed 3-year deal, which had a provision that he gets paid if he's injured and not fired, and he can't be fired.
Who was that, did you say?
Dr. Death Steve Williams.
Oh, okay.
Kurt Angle worked the house shows this weekend against Tiger Ali Singh. He's not due to start on TV anytime soon. He's going to Memphis, but
So they have him working Tiger Ali Singh to learn to be a better wrestler? That's a poor choice.
So that's the news. That's
I'm guessing
everything.
that Kurt Angle, before any professional wrestling training, could probably still put together a match better than Tiger Ali Singh.
I mean, you would hope so. You really would hope so. What are the plugs, please, Sandra?
Okay, you can find me on Twitter at Sandra Ruth RW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside underscore the Ropes. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for all sorts of pay-per-view reviews. We just recently covered Over the Edge as best we could. We'll be covering Stomping Ground whenever that happens. Is that a week from this
It's a
weekend?
week today.
Yeah, that's happening. So we'll be talking about it. But yeah,
Basically,
patreon.com/insidetheropes for all sorts of bonus content there. Yellow Ropes Forever is going up as well. Go to youtube.com/insidetheropes for interview content. Tons of StarCast stuff up there right now. More to come. And you insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets for tickets to Awesome Kong. Are those on sale currently?
they will be on
Soon?
sale tomorrow night at 8 p.m.
Okay, excellent.
And also, yeah, so Stomping Grounds next weekend, so we'll be covering that. And then the following week, it'll be the King of the Ring 99 review on Patreon as well. So plenty of stuff going up.
Yes.
And this week, I'm going to be watching. Which kind of shows that I'm watching for this review that we're doing?
I believe we were going to watch the Russell. Now I can't remember what the name of it was. I will send it to you.
We're watching a Chikara show this week. I'm also doing a podcast with the Kayfabe Jobber where we've been given 10 songs. And we need to review the songs. So we're reviewing some music.
You're reviewing music?
Reviewing music over on
Okay.
Patreon.
Why not?
It's your money. Okay, whose plane is out, Sandra?
Ken Shamrock.
Okay, I feel like after this we need to take a break from his music because we do play it most weeks. But yes, here to
we
play
do,
that
but
is...
like he was so good and he was in a straight. If Matt DeLuca had a theme song, we would be playing Matt DeLuca's song, but he doesn't have one. So in the absence of Matt DeLuca having a theme tune, I think that it just needs to be Ken Shamrock.
Here's the theme tune of Ken Shamrock. He broke out of a straitjacket and belly-to-bellied Shane McMahon, and for that, we love him. Bye, everybody.
Bye.